Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast, here at www.bullsbeat.com.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat, Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. Thank you to Fred Pfeiffer and the Chicago Bullseye for letting me hijack their feed for this special episode of the Bulls Beat. I might try and whip out a few podcasts here and there. If I do, I will be posting them on this feed. I'll try and keep it going every once in a while when I get a moment. The NBA draft and my regular draft party each year got me a little bit excited about the Bulls, and maybe just having a year off where I didn't pay so much attention to everything going on and not having to write every day just gave me a little bit more enthusiasm about Chicago basketball and coming back again. So I will say, if you have small children, maybe not the best idea to keep the podcast on in the car, because it's possible this might end up being a rant. It's possible there might be some four-letter words thrown out in there. I'm not saying there will be for sure, but we'll see how it goes, as this is fairly unscripted. So what did the Bulls do? They traded Jimmy Butler to Minnesota for Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the number 7 pick. They also gave up the number 16 pick. That sets a direction, as John Paxson said, that they're going to rebuild. Now, I'm okay with them setting the direction of rebuilding. I was okay with them keeping Butler and trying to build around him. I think these things are interesting from a couple perspectives, because both of them have a very low percentage chance of being successful anytime in the near-time future. If you keep Butler, you would have to try to look to make trades like Rajon Rondo to San Antonio for LaMarcus Aldridge, and then they cut Rondo, say, take all the cap money savings, and the Bulls get Aldridge, who probably isn't that good. I don't know that San Antonio would do this deal either. Maybe if the Bulls threw in a 16 pick, probably not, though. But that would be the type of move you'd have to do. You'd have to look to get some type of good quality, big name player in here because of that. And I think that that was probably always a pretty low chance that something like that was going to be able to happen and be done. And even if you got LaMarcus Aldridge, it's still probably not enough. You're probably still going to need some other people involved. So I think this was a fairly low chance of this working out. That said, rebuilding, also a very low chance. You look at teams who've been in the lottery repeatedly over and over and over again, and they don't ever make the type of progress that you need to move forward. It's also not a very good chance that things will work out. In the end, to win the NBA title, you're going to have to get really lucky and be really good, and those things aren't necessarily easy. I do think that under John Paxson, the Bulls have built two pretty great teams, starting from basically nowhere when they first took over the team in 2004, and then again when they refreshed with Derrick Rose. Now, the 2004 team didn't really have any great amount of luck. They didn't get any superior picks. They didn't have the right players and the right drafts or anything like that. They basically built it on grinders. That team obviously didn't go that far, won one playoff series, so it wasn't that great. When they rebuilt around Derrick Rose, they got extraordinarily lucky, sort of, because they got Derrick Rose, who was a franchise player, but then he burnt out in 4 years, so after that he was just a burden on our salary cap. So they did, when they had the chance to win, it was because they got extraordinarily lucky, and they did kind of put enough pieces around him where I think had Derrick Rose never gotten hurt, the Bulls probably would have won a title. I mean, it'd certainly be very close. You start thinking about the extra moves they've been able to make, being a team that was contending with a healthy Derrick Rose, a healthy Jimmy Butler. They would have had a real chance. So it would have been interesting to see how things would have gone. Now, they didn't go that way. We are where we are. So knowing that you have to choose one of these paths of what we're going to do, I was kind of okay with either choice, because I could see, hey, look, it's probably not likely to work out either way. So you just take whatever you feel good about. You try and see what moves you want to do. The Bulls chose the rebuilding route, and so that's fine. And now here's where my problem comes in. And this is where I now, for the first time, feel like this front office just might not be the right group of people. In general, I've been very positive about the front office. Those of you who read my posts, listen to the podcast for a long time, know that. I've been a supporter of them. And I think something is now missing when we look at this. And I think I'm going to throw this back to the Doug McDermott trade on the way out the door. The Doug McDermott trade to pick him up also wasn't something I was a fan of, but his trade out the door was very telling. Because what they did is they traded him for a guy named Cameron Payne, which we all know at this point. And Cameron Payne is a player whom it's like they liked him during the draft, and they said, we want to acquire this guy. And then they gave up the two best players in the deal and the second round pick to get him, which is just ridiculous. It's like they did not reevaluate his value based on the NBA. Who else was trying to get Cameron Payne that you had to go out and give a second round pick and Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott in order to make this happen. It just didn't make any sense. Taj Gibson was a guy who had, you know, some real value around the league that you could have maybe gotten a late first for him just by himself, or at least a couple second rounders. And Doug McDermott is probably a better fit for what Oklahoma City needed than Cameron Payne was on his own. So this is just a deal that doesn't make any sense, because the Bulls were looking at how they valued Payne when they were scouting him for the draft, and not based on what he'd done for the next 2 years in the NBA. And so how does that tie into draft time today? It does, because now you look at this trade, and they said, we got 3 lottery picks for Jimmy Butler, so that's a great deal. Well, I mean, are you still valuing Cameron Payne as a lottery pick? Are you still valuing Doug McDermott as a lottery pick? Zach LaVine, he's an okay player. He has a PER slightly under 15. He's a free agent at the end of this year, and by the way, he tore his ACL in February, so he's probably going to miss at least the first couple months of the season, and probably take another 2 to 3 months to round into form and get the rust off and have to adapt to this whole new system and everything else. You're going to basically have to make a decision on Zach LaVine and whether you want to pay him like $15 to $20 million based on seeing him play for 3 months after recovering from a torn ACL. And by the way, have we not learned our lesson that maybe getting guys who rely explicitly on their athleticism and basically nothing else whatsoever and tear an ACL might not be the best path forward? I think I've learned that lesson from now, but apparently our front office hasn't. And even if you did like LaVine, and even if you did think he's going to recover fully, and even if you did like all those things, you're now going to have to pay him market rate, you know, in this next year. So what it means to me is Zach LaVine is probably gone. I mean, I don't think this is a guy that I probably want to sign, because at this point, you're going to need to have some pretty good certainty before you start throwing big money at guys. So Zach LaVine, almost no value to the Bulls whatsoever in this trade. Now we go to the next piece, which is Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn is a guy they said they loved during the draft. I believe it. Lots of people like Chris Dunn during the draft. Whether you like Chris Dunn or didn't like Chris Dunn when he was viewed as a top 5 prospect is somewhat irrelevant at this point, because we now have more data to go with, which is Chris Dunn sucks in the NBA. He had a terrible year, just completely abysmal, shot under 40%, PER of 8.1, one of the worst rookie campaigns for a top 5 pick that we've ever seen. And so what do the Bulls do is they're trading him as if he still has his value prior to this year not occurring, which is the throwback to my Cameron Payne analogy just a moment ago. It's like you just turned off the league for the year and said, well, even though we have all this new evidence that suggests this guy is just absolutely awful, we're going to still treat him as if he is a star player, and that's a terrible idea. The other thing is Chris Dunn is a guy who played 4 years in college. It's not a guy who's a freshman who's still developing and maybe comes in a little raw. You look at this guy, he's a couple years older than D'Angelo Russell, who people are already talking about as being a huge bust, who, by the way, is played considerably better than Chris Dunn so far. And so you could have got D'Angelo Russell for basically nothing whatsoever, and yet you move Jimmy Butler to get Chris Dunn. And so that is where I'm saying, you know, your analysis and how value is weighed around the league and who you're competing with is really important here. You put your value on this guy, which is really a poor set of value based on old data, and you still executed this trade as if your value is his value around the league. Believe me, no one else is looking at Chris Dunn like, we got to acquire that guy. Everyone else is thinking we dodged a bullet. But somehow the Bulls look at this as a deal that we have to make, and that is a huge mistake. Next, you get the number 7 pick in the draft. All right, we got the number 7 pick. And who do we get with it? We get Lauri Markkanen. And now, maybe Lauri Markkanen will become a great player. I don't know. But his upside comparison was Channing Frye. We had a game at my draft party, which was, watch every player's draft highlights and see if any of them have a worse set of highlights than Lauri Markkanen. And our thought so far was probably, no one did. He probably had the worst highlights of anything. This guy basically just shot spot-up threes from 1 foot behind the three-point line that were wide open. That's all he did. Can't do anything else. Can't defend, can't rebound, can't drive. And when they showed his highlight of him driving, it was like in slow motion. It was like the Brad Miller retirement move in his last couple of years in the league when he came back to the Bulls. This is not a guy who's ever going to become a great player. And this also is a scary thing for me, because the Bulls are acting as if it's 5 years, 6 years ago in the league. They've not adapted to the fact that stretch fours really aren't a thing anymore. Yes, you need three-point shooting. But what everyone else in the NBA is doing right now is they're getting small forwards. They're having them play small. You're just getting guys who can shoot, who can drive, who can dribble, and you're playing two of those guys who are a little taller than normal guards, and you're playing them in the forward positions. That's what teams are doing now. The stretch four, the guy who's just 7 feet tall and can just hang out at the three-point line and shoot fours, or shoot threes, that is not a player who really is on any successful teams in the league anymore. That guy's been around for a while. You got your Rafe LaFrance, you know, your Troy Murphy, your Ryan Anderson. That guy has never been a really valuable guy in terms of making a big difference. If he is a valuable guy, it would be because he can also defend the power forward position well. But we know Markkanen can't do that. He can't defend, he can't rebound. And so if he's really just a tall guy who can shoot threes, that adds almost nothing whatsoever to your team. At the point where he can't defend and can't rebound, this guy is actually worse rebounding than pretty much any guard that was in the draft. You might as well draft a 6'3 guy and play him at power forward. I mean, it makes no sense to get this guy and think that he's going to be any good. And when I look at him, he looks to me like he's a poor man Nikola Mirotic. So I'm not excited about this draft pick at all. And now he was rated around this spot in other drafts, so maybe there's something else that I'm missing. I'm sure he'll provide some shooting. I'm sure he'll do some positive things. But there's nothing to be excited about this guy right now, in my view. And certainly he doesn't have the upside to ever be a franchise player unless something truly remarkable happens that we don't expect, and he becomes like the next Dirk Nowitzki. But people have said that about every guy who is tall and can shoot threes since Dirk Nowitzki, and so far, there's no one else who's been even close. Roll through your mind right now and try and think of the best three-point shooting 7-foot tall guy or 6'10", 6'11 guy, the best three-point shooting power forward who's really a true power forward, and how good he is and what team he played on and how much he helped that team win. And when you go through that list, it's like, wow, this is a really small list. And you start thinking about what is the position this player would be in on a title team. Would he be their, you know, best guy, their second best guy, their third best guy, their fourth best guy? You start writing that list down, and you're basically coming up with these guys as like seventh best guy or eighth best guy in a title team is the role that this is a guy that fits for. And so you traded Jimmy Butler, now to recap, for Levine, whom you're probably going to give up in a year or massively overpay. Dunn, who by all things we can see right now, is just a terrible NBA player, and we purchased him thinking that he still had the value he had a year ago prior to watching him be terrible. And a guy who projects into your best case scenario to be a role player and to replace a guy that you're probably going to get rid of this season because you don't think he's worth the money. That's what we got back. And oh, by the way, we also gave them the number 16 pick. Now, just me, if you are someone who is trying to rebuild and you need draft picks, because rebuilding teams need draft picks because they need young players on young contracts and need to get as many bullets in the gun, so to speak, as they can trying to find someone successful, you don't trade away draft picks. We effectively traded Jimmy Butler to trade up from 16 to 7 and get two guys who suck. That's the way I look at this trade. I mean, it's just a terrible, terrible trade. And so, why did we give up 16? Because we're also terrible negotiators. Can you possibly imagine the conversation here where Minnesota says, oh, by the way, and we're going to need the 16 back, and the Bulls say no. You really think that Thibodeau is going to be like, yeah, never mind, I don't want that all-NBA two-way playing superstar. I really want the number 7 pick, Zach LaVine, who's got a torn ACL, and Chris Dunn. There's no way the number 16 is going to hold up this deal. And if it does, you just hold up the deal. I also have to think in my head, there's no way that Boston doesn't trade the number 3 for Jimmy straight up. And just something else. I can't imagine that Boston says no to that. Yeah, it'd be crazy if they did. And it just seems like they would have this in the bag. There's almost anything Boston could have offered us would have been better than the deal we got. Number 3 straight up would have been better. Taking whatever pick they got next year, taking Brooklyn's next year pick. Yeah, by the other one, I meant the one they got from that Philly trade. Either of those scenarios, vastly, vastly better than what actually happened. This was just a terrible deal for the Chicago Bulls, a terrible show of value, a terrible set of GMing. And so then we go on and we talk about how we're rebuilding and we're going to rebuild and we picked a direction and whatever. The one thing that I thought was hilarious about this draft, we're all sitting at the party, we're all bummed out, we're all depressed, and then we see that Jordan Bell is slipping into the second round and he might be available for where the Bulls pick. And everyone in the room is really excited about Jordan Bell. I haven't followed the draft. I don't know much about Jordan Bell, but everyone else super excited about Jordan Bell. And I'm thinking like, all right, cool. I'll get down the Jordan Bell bandwagon. I would like this guy. Why not? And so we're all really excited. And then it comes up and Jordan Bell is left on the clock and on the board and the Bulls are on the clock. And the Bulls take Jordan Bell. And you're like, all right, cool. Maybe we salvage something. Maybe this Jordan Bell guy will be something. Maybe this will be something exciting. And then what happens? We sell him to Golden State. We sell him to the Warriors for cash. You're a rebuilding team, and you are selling picks for cash. You're not over the cap. You're not in the luxury tax. You're not in a small market. This is just straight-up greed. You need a player like Jordan Bell to come in and maybe give you some hope. You need to get guys who can possibly do something for you in the second round. You need lots of young guys to hope some pan out. Now, is Jordan Bell going to be the next big thing? Probably not. You know, I'm just going to go with the idea that even though a lot of people like this guy, the fact that NBA GMs let him fall to 38 means he probably won't amount to much. Probably not. He might. Maybe he'll be the next Draymond Green. I don't know. But probably not. He'll probably just be a guy who doesn't do much. But the principle of the matter is, you need young guys to hit. You need to get new players. You need to get assets. And you have a chance to get a nice, really cheap asset, and you sell it for cash to pay for Rajon Rondo's buyout, which I'm sure is going to happen at this point, because this is just a complete no-brainer, what the hell are you doing type of move. Why would you possibly do this? It is so, so awful. I just can't believe that they sold a draft pick while trying to rebuild and bring in young players. It makes no sense. You need to be on the other end of this. You should be buying draft picks, not selling them. And so that is just an embarrassment. Just a complete embarrassment. And so, what can the Bulls do going forward? One, I think at this point, you need to clean house of the general management team. I've been a longtime supporter of John Paxson, Gar Foreman. I think they've been unfairly criticized at many points in the past for performance that was, you know, good to average to above average, like in that range. And that a lot of times if you switch to someone else, things would probably be worse. People hold things against them that haven't been fair. But this is just tragically awful. I think these guys just need to be refreshed at this point. Sometimes you've just been in a job too long. You just need to get some fresh blood in there. And the Bulls are at that point now. And the reason is not because I hate this move or anything with this move. The cash thing I get is probably driven by Reinsdorf or whatever. But it's because of the lack of analysis. It's because you took someone who projects out to be a stretch four at a time where the league is not using stretch fours, that this position is no longer valuable. This is a position that existed quite a ways back. It's just the league is passing this by. We're looking for even younger, more athletic, multi-talented, multi-skilled players to run the offenses these days. Guys like this stretch four cannot defend at this level anymore. So it's just not what the league is doing. It's by not reevaluating the talent when you look at guys who you liked in the draft and that was fine, but now they played in the NBA and you've not reevaluated them to say, based on their NBA experience, their value is now at this point. These are critical flaws. These are things that are going to happen over and over again in various selections. It's not just about making the wrong pick in the draft because you analyze some stuff wrong. These things can kind of happen. The draft is difficult. You don't know how all those components are going to work out. But you should constantly be reevaluating and reweighing your talent. And you should be constantly reevaluating your understanding of the league. And in this draft, in this rebuild moment, the Bulls showed that they failed to do those things. And that's why you're going to need to refresh things. I will say now, my one thing I think the Chicago Bulls can do going forward that is useful and that they have to do is you have to trade Rajon Rondo now. There are a lot of teams out there that want to add cap space. You trade Rajon Rondo, you take back some bad contracts, you get some future draft picks, other team waves Rondo, they can stretch him out. This is a deal where you can maybe take $15, $20 million from another team and you should be able to buy some real draft picks for this. That is something that if you're going to rebuild, you have to do. That is what Philadelphia has done to get all these different kinds of draft picks. It's the type of thing that a team like Boston would do to figure out ways to get type of draft picks. If you're going to rebuild, you can't just go in with your own pick each year. You have to find ways to get more bullets in the gun, more assets, more ways to add young players, more ways to possibly find that diamond in the rough somewhere in case you don't just land at number one in a LeBron James year type of draft, because that's a very, very low percentage chance of happening. So you need to just get more and more chances to make this rebuild work. And this is an opportunity for the Bulls to get one of those chances, is to just trade Rajon Rondo out, try and get someone's future pick going in. You got to do those types of moves if you're the Chicago Bulls at this point. So that's where I'm at right now. Not a great draft. Not a great trade. I don't mind the direction. I don't mind that they rebuilt. That was fine. But this was not the way to do it. You definitely could have gotten more value had you just done something else. You definitely could have kept that 16th pick. You should have done a better job evaluating the talents of the players that you received. Just a very, very poor start to the rebuilding era. This has been Doug Tonis. Since I have no website anymore, you can't contact me. But if you want to try to just reach out to me on email for the heck of it, you can do so at DougTonis@gmail.com. and I will get back to you. Otherwise, I am cruising the Real GM forums again here and there, so you can catch my posts there. And hopefully I'll have a few more podcasts going out this summer, and maybe I'll even start podcasting regularly during the regular season. Until next show, thank you for listening.